Hi guys, before you listen to this week's episode with Tom Hall and Andrew Gruen, we have some thank yous to say to specifically three of our Patreon supporters.
Yes, two brand new ones and one who has done something rather special indeed.
We have had a lovely $2 supporter in the shape of Helen Krumpolt. Thank you very much, Helen.
We have also got a brand new $5 patron in the shape of Courtney Taylor. Thank you so much, Courtney. And as you all know, by giving us $5, Courtney is going to get to nominate a subject for us to do a world's worst of. Mm. And last of all,
a previous Patreon donor, Annala Seddon, has upgraded her Patreon donation from $5 to $10 a month, which means, as well as suggesting a subject for the show, she's going to be a judge on the show at a future date.
Yes, she is. I presume we're going to let her be the judge of her suggestion.
I think that would seem the most appropriate decision. Thank you to all three of you. Thank you to everyone else who donates on Patreon. If you want to get involved on a little bit of Patreon action, as you can hear, there are different amounts of money you can send our way and help us make this crazy farrago. Then visit patreon.com/worstfootforward. Check out the rewards and join the likes of Annala, Helen and Courtney on board the good ship Worst Foot Forward. Iceberg ahead! Oh no, it's just the podcast. Enjoy!
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Worst Foot Forward, the podcast where each week we celebrate the best of the worst. I'm Ben Vanderveld, and this week you find us 300 feet beneath North London in a tunnel which we have dug using mostly fish knives. Meanwhile, there are decoy versions of myself and my co-host back in our original recording facility. As a disguise for him, I have taken three large golfing encyclopedias and wrapped them in comfortable Marks and Spencer's knitwear, whilst the part of me is being played by a mop with an MP3 of Beatles documentary playing next to it. We are tunnelling away in the hope that we can find our way into a different podcast, and I think that, I think we're getting to the surface now, and we should be making our way up into Mark Maron's pod. Oh no, we're in the moral maze. Oh, I'm so sorry, everyone. Just so you know, it's totally called the Punch Nazis. Anyway, and with me is the...
Stop pushing your agenda.
With me is the artfully forged Irish passport to my gorgeous crayon-written Narnia passport, Barry McStay.
This is exciting. We're in a new recording place.
We are in a new... You've called it a recording place.
I don't know what to call it. Studio. Shed.
Yeah, I mean, mobile office?
Yeah, mobile office.
So basically what's happened, as I think I alluded to in a previous podcast, Barry is moving house. I have
moved house.
Barry has moved house now to a place south of the river to which we do not go.
And it's much echoier than the previous one.
Yeah, because you currently have no possessions.
No possessions and all wood.
Yeah.
We also haven't seen each other in 2 weeks. So we're a little giddy.
You are the horniest homeless man on the entire street. We may hopefully be getting a proper professional recording studio, but for now, let us start with thanks. Let us give thanks to our friends Beth O'Brien and Bex Lindsay, who you will previously heard on this podcast, for allowing us to use Beth's tiny collapsible office in her garden. It's too grand to call it a shed.
Yeah, the collapsible word worries me. You had not said that to me before we got inside it.
Oh yeah, there's a time limit on this show.
Yeah. Straight out the gate, can I make a formal apology? Some of our podcast listeners pointed out to me that I made a mistake in last week's episode, and I want to fess up to this.
Go for it.
After what, 102 episodes? I know you're all massively surprised it's not Ben making this apology, by the way. Last week, I put forward a candidate for World's Worst Advert. That was a Photoshop, and I forgot to double check. Usually when we research stuff, if we come across a good story, we'll double check and research it and make sure that it's not something that's a fake. So last week, the terrible Stevie Wonder Atari ad that I said was terrible was indeed terrible because it was made up. So I'm sorry for putting that forward. Please forgive me.
Mate, it is the most 2019 it is the most 2019 thing that we fell for fake news.
Yeah, it really is. And apologies to anybody. I mean, to be honest, if you're coming to us for definitive facts, we do our best, but maybe, you know, go read a book or two as well.
Yeah, so apologies to the estate of Steve. Not the estate of Stevie Wonder, he's still alive. But,
oh my God, you should tell Stevie Wonder.
at the time of recording.
Oh God, Stevie, no, just stop.
Let's apologise to the estate of Atari instead. Yeah. anyway, let me introduce our guest. Our guest today are two actors and fellow Maze Masters alongside myself and Ben at the Crystal Maze.
It's been a while
live.
Since we've had a Maze Master on.
It's it. Now we're getting two, just to double our money.
Yeah.
From the Crystal Maze Live experience in London, they're both fine actors and immersive performers, working with the likes of Secret Cinema, at the Royal Exchange, on UK soaps like EastEnders and Emmerdale, and with Richard Ayoade. And both would have fit in perfectly on last week's episode too, because they have a raft of advert appearances on their CVs for everyone from Snickers to Amazon. Both are also the team behind Mostly Harmless, a company specialising in pop-up escape rooms. They debuted The Lifeboat at the 2018 Vault Festival in London, which won an award for innovation, and went on to pack their next game, Phobos 17, into a shipping container in South London. Now they return to the Vault Festival with Escape the Jacket, a 30-minute game for four people trying to discover a magician's past as they break free of his straitjacket. With reviews such as irrepressibly fun for their past work, they now have an hour in a recording booth to prove the accuracy of that quote. There is no escape. It's the inescapable Tom Hall and Andrew Gruen.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming in. Andrew's a long-time listener. This is really exciting.
Yeah. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
And to call, you didn't do the traditional method of picking up a phone. Instead came in like a classical messenger.
Yeah, real old-fashioned, old-school on this one.
We really had another guest booked in, and then they just showed up.
Yeah, Andrew is wearing the full Western Union uniform as well, which is really helpful.
One thing that I'm just looking at your CVs, because obviously, as friends, you don't tend to look at friends' CVs.
Right.
Well, maybe you do, Ben. You vet your friends in such depth?
Well, no. As somebody promotes a comedy night, my friends actively send me their CVs.
That's true.
And I get to look through them.
The two striking things from both of your CVs are Andrew has been Jesse Eisenberg's acting double.
Yeah, that's true.
In the Richard Idle,
I had the titular role, actually. It's called The Double.
The Double, yes.
Hang on, in Now You See Me or Now You See Me Too?
No, The Double.
No, in the film The Double, Richard Ayoade's sophomore film.
Yeah. Right, yes. Sorry.
Yeah. And Tom, play in a lot of your ads. We talked about this last week, how in adverts it's usually like hero guy. So many of your characters are called Dad.
Yes, it is. I'm like 90% Dad. It's something that I sell particularly well, I think.
How many children do you have?
Zero. No children.
That's a real stretch for you. This.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's something about my face that looks tired and sort of worn out and dad-like.
But also homely as well.
Yeah.
Homely.
Yeah.
Non-threatening.
Yeah. I feel that we could, you know, if we were to take the hair from the beard on your face, we could happily knit it into a dad jumper. I'm not suggesting that as
the
extra
podcast,
content.
We've changed the format of the podcast this week.
Now
we always ask our guests what they're worst at. Have you picked one together or individually?
Yeah, we sort of have a very similar... very similar thing that we're both worst at.
Which is?
I am the worst at recognizing celebrities.
You and me!
That was my
way back in episode one. I did this.
Oh, really?
That's literally my kryptonite.
Maybe it was locked away somewhere.
In real life or in? Because mine is usually pub quiz.
Both,
pictures
but
of people.
Generally real life. Like living in London, you do come across quite a few celebrities. Also, you know, in the work that we do, sometimes they come and play the games or you know see a play that you're in, and a lot of the times people will be like, "Did you, that guy you just took around was he was." From Game of Thrones. I'll be like, oh, really? Really?
Like, to be fair, there are like 1,000 people in Game of Thrones.
That's true, too. I think the closest I've come to recognizing a celebrity was Mila Kunis.
Oh, yeah.
Came and played the Crystal Maze.
Yeah, yeah.
And I looked over and I was like, oh, that woman looks a lot like Mila Kunis. Only when I got up to the green room later would people go,
That was actually
Mila Kunis.
That's
But that's great. That means that you can play it super cool with celebrities all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what do you do? I'm the queen. The crown. The crown is the giveaway. Tom, is yours something similar?
It is similar. Mine is just recognising people in general. I've gone from celebrities to everyone.
We have all worn name badges, especially for the recording today, just to help Tom out.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. It's been quite a struggle. I've worked with people and then met them 2 weeks later and forgotten that I'd been working with them, and they'd come up and sort of spoken to me and introduced themselves, and you're sort of sat there going, oh god, this person knows me. She's saying actual words are coming out of her mouth directed at me. And then in fact, that happened. She came up, I was at a party, some woman came up to me and started talking to me, definitely knew who I was. I was sat there trying to remember her name all the way through, and I finally worked it out. I met her at a party 6 months previously, and I was like, great, fantastic, this is great, we can talk. Someone else came over, I introduced her and said where I knew her from, and she said, Tom, we worked together 2 weeks ago. We spent 5 days working on the same show. Living in a travel lodge together.
2 weeks is a quick turnaround to forget someone's face.
Yeah, I mean,
you know that feeling when you meet someone and you realise you've met them before and the moment has passed where you can just double check their name again, so you're looking in their eyes imploringly going, throw me a fucking bone.
Yeah.
There has to be a German word for that feeling.
Yeah.
Well, there is an actual sort of syndrome where you can't recognise faces.
Prosopagnosia. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you can't recognise people's faces, yeah.
Oh, you can't remember names and faces, but you can remember that many of them.
Well, this week, we are going to talk about the world's worst escape, the boys working on an escape room. That's very exciting. We're big fans of escape rooms. We've done a few together.
We have done a few
and
together.
And a fridge magnet that we won from doing one on my birthday.
Yeah, like normally what happens in escape rooms, because the normal team is you and your husband, me and my wife, and...
Our friend Paul, because he's tall.
Yeah, and he can find the clues that other people can't. Yeah. And normally what happens is that... you and my wife do all the sort of Sudoku puzzly sort of things, and your husband is really good at opening the boxes,
puzzle boxes, things,
yeah. And Paul's very good at sort of mechanical things.
Yeah.
And then I rock back and forward in the corner for about 45 minutes. And then one of you lets me open a lock and I feel like I've contributed. Yeah.
It's all right, Ben, it'll be over soon.
Yeah, but I did, I think it was for your birthday, it was either your birthday or your husband's birthday, but there was about 8 or 9 of us.
Yes, and we went in two teams.
Two teams, and I got popped in with our friends Tom and Charlotte, who had never been in a room before. That's, and it was right. one of the best.
Not any room.
They've never been there.
What is this?
Yes.
Oh my god, the walls.
It's like lots of trees really close together.
Yeah, I mean, trying to explain an escape room to a nomadic people is so difficult. Just imagine.
They just go, you can lift up the flaps, can't you?
I mean, it's hard enough trying to explain an escape room to my family. Yeah. So what is it? I'd lock people in a room and charge them money for it.
And try and learn their names over the course of an hour.
And then try and get out. That's basically it. And people like this. Yeah, yeah, they love it. Don't make it really hard. I hide shit everywhere. Really get off it. So,
you know that test for serial killers where you start torturing animals and then you wet the bed and what's the other? I can't remember what the other one is.
Those are the first three clues of the last escape room I did.
Yeah. I think the fourth one is going to be runs an escape room.
But yeah, do this escape with Tom and Charlotte, and it was great. We were competing against the other room.
Yeah, we started at the same time.
Yeah, we had a feeling that we were winning, and then it got, and we were technically ahead on the way the clues had gone, and it got down to the final one, and we sort of like with about 3 or 4 minutes to go, just hit a brick wall and didn't know the way out, and we finally sussed it with 60 seconds to go. Start putting the clues together, and we left. And it's the only time we've done it. We left the escape room with 1 second left.
Yeah,
and I was literally grabbed the door handle, and half my body flopped out of the door.
Yeah. We were sitting down a hallway, and I saw Ben's head hit the floor, and a scream of triumph from behind him.
Oh, I've never felt more alive. Yeah. So anyway, that's a good escape room experience and a good escape experience, but we're not here to lord the best of humanity. We're here to plumb the depths.
Yep.
And Mr. McStay, you're going to go first.
I read about some escape rooms from Reddit user SB Randy. asked various people to tell them about their sort of nightmare escape room stories. These are all various examples. I think that a lot of them seem like they're from America. I'm not entirely sure. Took a group of six of us 20 minutes to find a key that was hanging on a wall to unlock a pair of handcuffs, which was placed on one of us at the start of the room. The person who eventually found it after the 20 minutes was blind. It was just a key on a wall. They're like, we need a key to unlock these handcuffs. There was one escape room where there was a scare involved, where there's an actor would appear and scare the people inside the room. It scared one guy so hard he punched a hole through the wall of the escape room. They're like, wow. Oh well, there's our escape route. One guy was running an escape room where a group walked out after 20 minutes for a cigarette and came back in to continue their work. There was one place where they didn't allow kids under 18 in it without an adult, and it was in this big sort of complex. I think it was an old shopping centre or mall, and so it was an escape room over several different floors and stuff, and the parents misunderstood the no kids without an adult thing, and they thought it was meant no kids at all. So the parents went and arranged with their child to sneak into this building and find them once they'd started playing. Except the child got lost inside the building, so after about 30 minutes, the parents had to tell the people running the escape room, we think our child should have snuck in and found us at this point. We need to go find our child. At which point it turned into an actual escape room looking for a human being.
If you're not bright enough to understand that very basic guideline, yeah, then you're not going to be able to break out of an escape room.
Yeah, struggle.
It's very good. Some heroes read about, they found a key attached to a desk, and then rather than solving the puzzle that would detach the key, they just picked up the entire desk, brought it over to the door they need to unlock, and rotated the desk.
that is brilliant.
That is quite good.
Is
yeah, I quite like that. One team had to offer a gift to an actor who was in one of the escape rooms, and one guy stripped naked and offered himself as a gift to that actor.
Wow, that's hard to keep in role.
Yeah,
when
that was exactly what the poster said. They found trouble. One guy arrived in an escape room with quite a pronounced limp with his family, and they went into the escape room. And after about 15 minutes. Pulled up his trouser leg to reveal that he had actually hidden a fire axe inside his trousers and started hacking at the door escape room. This may not have been in America. I think this might have been in Britain, because he did call 999 to be allowed out. But I don't know whether he was worried about being in the escape room too long or wanted to set a record. I'm not entirely sure. Finally, there was one escape room where people visited, and it had a toilet in the escape room. It was sort of like an old abandoned building. There was a toilet. But the toilet had a sign saying, non-functioning, do not use. Because the previous week someone had shat in the toilet.
I've had something similar, not someone shitting in the toilet. The first one that I built, it was a sort of sci-fi theme thing, and it had a DNA scanner in it, which was effectively a plastic pot from Muji, which I'd screwed onto something and written DNA scanner on it.
Yeah.
When they were looking for a severed finger. Anyway, every time, without fail, someone would open the thing, see DNA scanner, and start, like, go, and you're like, not your DNA. Why would it be your DNA? Why? How would that even work?
At least they just decided to spit rather than anything else.
People in escape rooms are like sort of water. They kind of find every little crack and hole possibly.
It is true.
It would have been beautiful if they'd open up the DNA scanner and you just had on the computer screen that you communicate with them with just, you are adopted.
I love a Pope, as long-time listeners will know, and the Pope has a personal escape route from the Vatican. It's called the Passetto di Borgo. It's an 800-metre long elevated passage from the Vatican to Castel Sant'Angelo, which is another papal property in Rome, and it was built by Pope Nicholas III in 1227. It was built by Pope Nicholas III in 1277 as if a pope's in danger, flee along this rampart, run a quick 800 metres. David Radisha setting a world record dressed as the Pope would be.
So I'm really disappointed it's not just an enormous slide. Climbs out of a window.
Slide down on the mitre. It's been used twice by popes. Once by Pope Alexander VI, the Borgia Pope, Rodrigo Borgia.
Yep.
In 1494, he fled when Charles VII's army arrived in Rome, because he'd made an enemy of Charles VII, and the Borgia Alexander VI had fathered several children, and he'd basically put people like his 18-year-old son, yes, a pope with several sons, and his mistress's brother on the College of Cardinals to basically secure his position. So he was worried when Charles VII arrived that he would be deposed for his corruption. And in 1527, Pope Clement VII fled during the sack of Rome. He'd made an enemy of another Charles, this time as Holy Roman Emperor Charles V. And he'd sided with France against the Holy Roman Empire. And so when Charles's army arrived, bravely, the Swiss Guard, all 189 of them, tried to hold off the several thousand Holy Roman Empire troops. The 42 of them eventually did manage to live and held them off long enough for the Pope and his cronies to run down this passage and escape from the Vatican.
Wow.
Yeah, he was caught a few days later.
Yeah, of course, because they just went, I wonder where that passage goes, but yeah. Oh, it's that big castle over there.
He had to pay 400,000 ducats in ransom to save his life when they did eventually catch him. And Pope Francis was involved in an escape quite recently.
Really?
In 2017, Pope Francis invited 20 prisoners from a jail in Modena to have lunch with him at the Basilica of San Petronio in Bologna, where lasagna was served. And it was this sort of thing of like washing the feet of the poor and dining with criminals.
Having lasagna.
Yeah. Jesus, they definitely had lasagna at the Last Supper. You're catering for at least 13 people. You need something easy.
Yeah. Everyone loves lasagna, right? You can't go.
And I think just as the food was served, someone did a head count and realised, yep, two of the prisoners had legged it.
Amazing. I really hope that the way that they legged it is that they sort of beckoned a couple of cardinals into a passageway, bopped them over the head, and just, yeah, popped on the vest. Little purple skull cap.
They just do a real life Nuns on the Run. So yeah, maybe Pope Frankie was in it. Maybe he was their man on the outside.
Well, the thing is, Pope Francis and Pope Frankie sound like the yeah. Jekyll and Hyde of the papal role.
I read about some famous prison escapes. John Dillinger, once the wanted man in America, he escaped from prison. His second escape from prison was when he made a wooden gun out of some wood from a bookshelf in his cell. He carved into the shape of a wooden gun, got some boot polish and painted it black, and managed to convince his guard that he had a gun and put the guard in the cell and burst his way out of prison.
I heard about someone doing this recently with soap.
Yeah. I can't remember where that was. It may be in South America, I think.
Yeah, they'd literally been collecting soap from the shower for like a couple of weeks, and then they mushed them all together and then carved a gun shape out of it.
Yeah.
And then painted it with shoe polish.
Yeah.
And then held a prison guard out
of it. I mean, I sort of respect the arts and crafts approach.
You have to. You particularly respect John Dillinger because when he left the prison, he stole the sheriff's new Ford V8 and drove it away.
That is a baller move.
That's good. Frank Abagnale of Catch Me If You Can fame, he escaped from prison in Georgia in 1971 by convincing the prison guards that he wasn't actually a prisoner. He was a government inspector spying on the guards and checking for malpractice.
I feel like you can only get away with that in more innocent times.
Well, it's the 70s because they just had like Attica State and a lot of other like prison malpractice cases, and so there was a lot of pressure on prison guards,
and there were a lot of inspections taking place.
And there were sections, and when he'd been brought to prison, the marshal who brought him had forgot his paperwork, but he said, oh, this is definitely Frank, he's the prisoner, I'll send the paperwork on to you. And so Frank immediately just began planting the idea that he wasn't a prisoner at all, and eventually got his guard to go, I've got to meet like the guy I'm giving my report to just outside the prison walls. As soon as he got inside, out of there, and managed to escape.
I don't understand how Frank Abagnale Jr. isn't a poker world champion. He is just such an astonishing bullshitter,
and now he's like consultant with the FBI on white collar crime. It's amazing. John Gerard, have you ever heard of John Gerard?
No.
He's the only man apparently to have escaped from the Tower of London.
Oh
yeah. And he was a Jesuit priest.
All those priests.
Yeah. We Jesuits are very crafty. He was in prison in the Tower of London in the Elizabethan era when, obviously, a lot of Catholic persecution was taking place. He was being tortured, never broke, never told anyone about other sort of Catholics or any locations of priests in hiding. And he was sentenced to death, and he was like, I need to get out of here. He wrote notes in orange juice, which is it made invisible ink, a bit like we think lemon juice does now. He wrote notes in orange juice to his accomplices, who rowed a boat into the moat around the Tower of London, threw up a rope to him. In climbing down it, his hands were so mangled from the torture he'd been through, he actually fell, survived the fall, got into the boat and managed to row away, and he lived out the rest of his life in Rome in safety.
Wow, and he entered the Pope's chambers by going the wrong way up the escape route.
Yeah.
Like, surprise!
And finally, I read about the Empress Matilda, who disputed the crown of England against Stephen. So they were willing, he was William the Conqueror's, I think, grandson was Stephen, and she was his cousin. And they were at war for quite a long time as to who should be the ruler of England. And in 1142, she was under siege in Oxford Castle with Stephen's army outside the walls. And it was a very snowy night, and she wrapped herself in a white cloak, put on some rudimentary ice skates and skated across a lake to a nearby castle, Wallingford Castle, and managed to evade their clutches.
Wow.
But then again, people were stupid in the 1140s, so that snowdrift is moving at pace. And they made a truce and agreed that Stephen would be king, but her son Henry would then be his heir. Funny enough, Stephen died a few months later, and Henry became king, and so Matilda got the last laugh. But my world's worst escape comes from the back catalogue of Houdini, who we were just chatting about a bit earlier. Houdini, famous for escaping from handcuffs and straitjackets and a milk can. One of his most famous acts was the Chinese water torture cell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Why is it Chinese, though? That's what I always wondered.
Yeah, literally.
There's no explanation for that.
No, they just thought it makes it sound more exotic.
Yeah. In fact, a lot of magicians at the time sort of borrowed from sort of supposedly Chinese culture.
Yeah.
To add some allure to their tricks.
Yeah, we talked about it in the World's Worst Mantra. I can't remember the guy's name, who was like basically an American dude, but he called himself like Chi Kang Cheng or something like that. Basically, I'm missing at me going, was he just racist?
No,
he saying this guy was racist?
No. What I was doing was because I'm going to have to describe to the listeners, it was the contortions that your face went through as you tried to calculate something that sounded both accurate and like you were merely reporting racism, not doing racism. And what you came up with
was secondhand racism.
Yeah, knockoff racism. This racism used to belong to a little old lady who would only ride it down to local shops for 10 minutes a day. And the name you came up with was, may I say, Chi Kang Chen,
yeah.
Chicken Cheng, which I have to say sounds delicious. And I took that racism, and what I did is I honed it and made it more racist.
Yes, congratulations. High fives all around.
Yes.
Well, the Chinese water torture cell, he'd be lowered into a tank upside down with his feet in some stocks, which would be sort of outside the water. And he'd have to hold his breath and escape from the chains and the stocks with a curtain pulled around it, obviously. And
the original Chinese version of these there were chicken stocks.
You are. I'm this close to walking right now. If only I could escape my chains. Mainly it was a trick of acrobatics. He'd be able to. The stocks were sort of able to get out of them quite quickly and then reattach them to the roof of the cell to make it look like they were still actually nailed or screwed down. And it was just a case of him sort of turning himself upside down and escaping. On the 11th of October 1926, he fractured his ankle when they were still in the stocks. Oof. Yeah. 13 days later, a fan came into his dressing room and wanted to do the thing he was really famous for. Do you know what thing he was famous for?
Shooting him with a bullet.
No!
Sorry.
It's amazing he had as long a career as he did. Yeah, Houdini practiced the bullet catch, but with his heart, famously.
And just allowed anyone to come up
with any old gun.
Yeah, I got a gun made of soap. All right, you got one.
Just one more. One more, fine.
He'd pan the bazooka and give them a bazooka made of soap. No, the thing that he would do is that he'd let anyone punch. You could punch me as hard in the stomach as you like and I wouldn't flinch. But when the fan came in and wanted to do it, he didn't tell Houdini he was doing it, so Houdini wasn't prepared. Houdini was also lying down at the time because his ankle had been broken doing this escape a couple of weeks ago. So when he punched him, famously, he burst his appendix.
Which was already ripe and
About to go anyway. I think it exacerbated it. And a week later, due to complications, Houdini died. So obviously, the thing that he's sort of famous for dying from this punch to the stomach, but he wouldn't have been in the position he was had he not failed at this escape from the Chinese water torture cell. So I'm going to put that escape down as the world's worst escape.
Ah, very good, because it meant that he could not escape death.
But then, can any of us, Ben? Particularly when death comes in with a gun and says, I heard I can shoot you in a second.
Hi everyone, I'm Katie Nelson. And I'm Olivia Mickle. We're two academic sisters. And we host a podcast called What's Her Name? What's Her Name podcast tells you the stories of fascinating women that you've never heard of. We're unearthing the histories of really interesting women that have slipped through the cracks of our collective history. We add era-appropriate music. We interview really fascinating experts. Everyone from professors to authors to the manager of a brothel museum. We cover it all. So give it a listen. What's Her Name Podcast.com.
My initial thought for World's Worst Escape, it just popped straight in my head, maybe because it's in the news a lot recently. Brexit. That's where my mind went.
Brexit, I haven't heard of it. Can you please explain it to me?
And it made me think, it'd make a great escape room. You just have like... Article 50 has been triggered. Oh, you have 60 minutes to negotiate.
Trade deal.
Theresa May is giving you clues. You stand no chance.
She's just sending you gifts of wheat fields. She's no idea what to say.
The problem is that the answers to the clues would change every 10 minutes.
The guy who's greets you at the escape room is Jean-Claude Juncker. Yeah. This deathly exactly. figure.
Yeah. And the problem is if you escape, then you're just in another room with Donald Trump.
Yeah. Not much of a reward. Yeah. No. I just sort of shunted that to the side. Then I did sort of think about sort of these escape, magic escapes that have gone terribly wrong.
Yeah.
But it's also just kind of depressing. Like, because one of Houdini's famous escapes was the buried alive trick,
for example.
And a lot of his tricks and his escapes, actually, he could do them quite quickly, but then would draw them out.
Yeah.
And would play his audience, like, depending.
Yeah, he'd be lowered into, like, in a tank into the water and be out in seconds and would just be holding on as long as he could.
Yeah,
but he could
exactly.
hold his breath for about a minute.
Yeah.
Some of the things he did have to hold his breath for a minute to wait till he was covered up and stuff.
Yeah. And there's been a lot of people who have tried the buried alive trick.
Yeah.
And have barely survived. And think one guy even actually died doing it. So that was just a little bit too sad for me. So I went to the
They save on funeral expenses.
Yeah.
there is a guy, it was last done, I think, in Britain in 2015 by a guy called Anthony Britton.
Oh, yes.
Who, I mean, I don't want to denigrate Anthony's good name because he's already done that for himself, but he basically looks like a third-rate Paddy McGuinness impersonator. And my favourite quote from him about it was, normal people would have panicked, but as an escapologist, you can't let that happen. When you panic, your body goes into shock. In this sort of stunt, that would have been a nightmare. I wouldn't call it a fail. I did as well as I possibly could. I didn't escape the grave, but I am here to tell the tale.
I'm as well as can be expected as a terrible, like, denouement to a trick for a magician. Pick a card, any card, put it back in the deck, go to pick up. Was this your card? No. Well, it's, you know,
Also, it went as well as could be expected as the denouement of the Brexit escape room, isn't it?
Congratulations, here's a jar of jam. Try and sell it to Qatar.
Very good. So, in the end, though, I did end up going to the deep, deep well of prison escapes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them. I mean, there are a lot of hilarious escapes. So, well, let's start with this. Like, if I said prisoners, what country might you think of?
America!
Yes, we do incarcerate quite a lot of people. But more historically, like...
Australia?
Correct, yeah. Yes. So I went to Australia, and there was a famous penal colony in Tasmania, and it was a really harsh prison. It was remembered as the site of doomed escapes, drowning, starving.
Wow.
Some people resorted to cannibalism.
Oof. Sorry, this is you keeping it light.
Yes.
buried alive attempts.
But my favorite escape came from a guy named George Billy Hunt. And
we're going on a Billy Hunt. He's escaped again.
So we said we got Australia. What do you think of when you think of Australia?
It's dangerous animals.
Yes, but maybe a kind of annoying one.
Kangaroos.
Kangaroos.
Yeah.
Kangaroos. George Billy the Hunt decided, this was in the early 1800s, to disguise himself.
No fucking way!
As a kangaroo!
Yes! And then smuggle other prisoners out in his pouch.
I don't know where he got the pelt. He got
That's
the pelt.
So good.
He dressed himself. He began to hop along. And it was actually working. That's the thing that kind of boggles my mind.
Oh my
as well.
God.
It was working. except that the prison guards who were on watch were, their rations were really short.
Oh, no.
And they're sitting there, they're bored, and we all know when you're bored, you get hungry.
Yeah.
And they see this lumbering, hopping kangaroo across the plains, and they think, that could be a nice mid-afternoon snack. So they start to take aim, and eventually start firing off a few shots at the guy.
So
at which point, poor Billy Hunt, you know, he has no choice but to throw off his kangaroo.
Stop shooting me! I'm a prisoner.
And confess to being a human. To which he was rewarded with 120 lashes.
That's so good. And
well, you got to tenderize him first before you eat him.
Exactly. So Billy Hunt, that's my.
I love him. That
a kangaroo.
Is so good.
That's incredible.
Enough people try to escape from prison dressed as gorillas these days.
It is beautiful that his approach to a prison escape is going. I'm going for a classic joke format.
That's amazing.
Oh, I love that. I mean, I'm sorry to say this about a fellow human being, but he is a prisoner. I'm sort of sad that he didn't get shot.
Yeah. I'm sad he didn't escape and then be adopted by a herd of kangaroo.
Yeah, I'm sad that he didn't escape and then find a little boy trapped down a well and then have to try and communicate that still in character.
Go on to start his own spit sitcom.
Yeah.
So I was trying to look for some kind of historical escapes, and keeping it nice and light, I decided to go with the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand.
An old friend of the show.
Exactly. I can imagine he probably pops up quite a few times. Yeah. It's more of a failure to even attempt to escape. He survives one assassination attempt, goes off to the governor's mansion, and then decides, what the hell, I'm going back in this open-top car again for a drive around Sarajevo. What's the worst that could happen?
It is literally like if Lee Harvey Oswald had missed and Kennedy had gone, hang on, was that a McDonald's back there? Can we back up? We're gonna go and get takeaway. That's fine, I'll get this. I'll lean out the window.
So this is also it's a bit of a double header. So obviously he was assassinated by Gavrilo Princip, but the initial assassination attempt was done by a guy whose name, oh my god, Nedeljko Cabrinovich.
Sounds good.
Yeah, sounds legit. He threw a bomb in the carriage. It exploded. I think it bounced out of the carriage and hit the car behind, and then it exploded.
Yeah. That sounds very Mario Kart, doesn't it?
The bombs never go off at the right time in Mario Kart.
But then he tried to evade capture by committing suicide.
Yeah, they had the cyanide tablets.
Yeah,
didn't they?
He ate cyanide and then jumped into a river. Unfortunately, the cyanide that he took was out of date.
Yeah.
So it just made him really ill.
Yeah.
And also because it was summer, the river was at a really low tide. So there was literally 10 centimetres of water.
Broke his leg or something, didn't
he? So he jumped, he ate cyanide, jumped into a river where there was no water, and then got dragged out by the crowd and beaten to a pulp.
So you're telling me the man who tried to kill Archduke Franz Ferdinand was essentially Wile E. Coyote?
Yeah. So
Acme Escape River.
And earlier that gentleman advised George Billy Hunt on how to escape from a prison.
So that is my sort of worst escape. It's more of a not attempt to kind of escape in the first place.
Yeah. Do you imagine when he heard the news that Princip had succeeded later on?
Yeah, just like, oh, that's how you do it. Yeah,
that's quite bittersweet. Yeah. Like the cyanide. Right,
Have you ever wondered which movie franchise is best and why? Or why Eric Matthews is the most interesting character on Boy Meets World? Or even how a small town in upstate New York became a hotbed for strange and paranormal activity? Then tune in to a podcast about something as I dig into these subjects and more every Monday with help from a special guest. And stay tuned for a podcast about football where every week of the NFL season we round up the previous week's action and make can't-miss picks against the spread for the following week. After you listen, give us a rating and review, and for more great content, visit our website, apodcastaboutsomething.com, and follow us on Twitter @APASomething.
In 1244, there is a Welshman called Griffith Ap Llewellyn, and...
Sorry, are you sure he's from Wales? That name doesn't sound Welsh enough.
He was actually from Barbados, but was trying to really blend in. He was a Welsh freedom fighter, and he was imprisoned in the Tower of London, and he managed to craft a makeshift rope out of bedsheets and cloths, lowered it, began climbing down. However, because he was so fat, the rope broke and he fell to his death.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to be doing some rope climbing, do a few press-ups at least.
And it does look really easy in the movie.
Yeah, fail to prepare, prepare to fail, I say.
You're right. I've attempted rope climbing, and it's hard.
Yeah,
because even if you're a slender person, you're still weighing 7, 8, 9 stone.
You like your outdoorsy stuff, Andrew. Have you ever climbed a rope?
Climbed a rope.
Yeah,
maybe a vine.
Yeah. Maybe a vine if you're outdoors.
No, rock climbing, stuff like that. Yeah, you know, but never just a rope. I mean, it's got to at least have some knots in there.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
maybe that was the mistake.
Two ropes with little bars in the middle.
That would be yeah.
And maybe a metal rope with struts on both sides.
Yeah, I mean, if I was trying to fashion something to escape from prison, I'd use pillows and sheets to fashion some sort of escalator system to take me out of there. Just as, or even a lift as the.
Is the prison a stair lift out of soap? Been mushing it together for months. It's going to be great, guys.
It's like, where's the prisoner? Oh, he's disguised himself as June Whitfield. Next, purely in terms of numbers, this next one is a really poor escape. So, Fort San Cristobal, which is located top of San Cristobal Mountain in Pamplona, in Spain, and it served as a prison during the Spanish Civil War. And around 30 prisoners organised a mutiny, and what they did, that sort of developed into a huge prison break, and 792 prisoners escaped from there. So, you know, big old numbers. However, 585 were arrested, 211 died, and 14 of those arrested were sentenced to death. So in the end, only 3 of them succeeded in getting to the French border. So purely in terms of stats, shit escape. Next up... like, peeking behind the curtain, listeners, me and Barry often sort of have a wander down Wikipedia, and I'm sure if you're listening to this show, you're a fan of going down a wormhole.
And in my case, as in last week, then forget to double-check our sources.
But I saw a surprisingly big list, actually, and there are a lot of great lists on Wikipedia, but this list was titled Helicopter-Based Prison Escapes. And I thought... great. And what's lovely, it has a list of like the day and who did it and a little bit of details, and then just a yes or no success column. and it's like reading a boxer's record. It's great. One of my favourites is from
he escaped on points.
Yeah. April 17th, 1989, a gentleman called Ben Kramer, who was a famous Apache boat owner and racer. He was serving life without parole for racketeer influenced and corrupt organisations act charges resulting from drug trafficking, and what happened was he had a chap called Charles Clayton Stevens, who was a rookie pilot, and he flew never plan an escape with a rookie pilot.
You'd think I need to escape from prison. Will you learn how to fly a helicopter, please? Literally nobody in the whole country can fly a helicopter. You need to learn.
So the helicopter flew over the prison yard and hovered 12 inches off the ground in a very tight space.
Wow.
Kramer, all 6'2" and 240 pounds of him, leapt onto the helicopter, meaning that the rear rotor struck razor wire in the prison yard, causing it to be uncontrollable. And then what happened was that the helicopter then spun round and round and round and round and crashed in the prison grounds, and they both got serious injuries.
But the other prisoners who escaped through the hole and made of the fence.
Correct.
Delighted. Yeah.
The another one, there's a chap called Nordin Benalal, who is from Belgium, and in October the 28th, 2007, he arranged accomplices to hijack a helicopter near the prison and fly it into the prison. He could go out of there. However, as the helicopter landed, it was then swarmed by other prisoners and was then unable to take off.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Do you have the French guy who, like, escaped several times. It's made it like his trademark.
Well, I don't have him, but I have a different. I have a Danish guy that I'm going to tell you about. So I'll get on to him in a minute. But there are quite a few countries where actually escaping prison isn't against the law. Hear me out.
I mean, that seems like a real flaw. Just like, you're asking for trouble.
That's
really.
Basically going, you're in an escape room. You have an unlimited amount of time to get out.
Annoyingly, they get you on a technicality. So Mexico, Germany, Austria, it is all not against the law to escape from prison because they reason that it is basic human nature to try and escape. However, anything
it's only fair that it's not against the law.
Yeah, anything that you do during that escape that can be interpreted as breaking a different law, they'll get you on. So if you break a window and jump out of it, it's criminal damage, isn't it, mate? Back in you go. My favourite one is if you jump out of an open window and escape, then you can be arrested for stealing prison property, as in the clothes that you are wearing. I love that sort of stuff.
That's great. It's just like the fact that there wasn't a law against slavery in Britain until the early 2000s, I think. But there was laws against all the other stuff that would basically make up enslaving somebody.
Oh. Yeah. Well, that's a relief.
Is it?
I ran a very tight operation at primary school. Denmark, like this, Denmark is obviously sort of like comically socialist in many ways, and they have like lovely open prisons where if you commit a jail, then there's massage parlours and Reiki healing and philosophy classes.
Nice.
And six-a-side handball. That's not true, but they're open prisons.
That sounds like a euphemism, if I'm honest.
Yeah. But you can, you know, can go to the dentist, visit doctors, go to the library, and it's all about rehabilitation. Yeah. And they've got a very low recidivism rate, especially it's compared really to America.
States, funny that, isn't it?
Yeah. On the other side, they do have a similar problem to America, and that far too many of the people incarcerated are ethnic minorities compared to the percentage in the population. But Denmark has a similar thing that, you know, it is not illegal to escape from jail. What that means is that quite a few people try and escape a lot. My favourite of which is Brian Bo Larsen, who a couple of years ago, 2017, he escaped from prison for the 22nd time.
Ooh, mama.
Yeah, so good at escaping, but also good at getting caught.
Yeah.
This is what he did.
The 22nd time.
He was arrested on the island of Funen. he was captured cruising in a stolen car, accompanied by a hooker, and high on hallucinogenic drugs. According to the sex worker's description of events, he began hallucinating, which caused him to crash through a fence, run into some trees, and then get out to fight some imaginary people.
This is after he'd escaped, or this is why he was arrested before he escaped?
No, that was after he'd escaped.
Right.
So basically, every time he escapes, and he just also, like, all of his escapes involve things like water hoses and ropes and in containers and trash cans.
Oh, that's good. It's nice to see he's always doing new material.
You've got to mix it up.
Yeah.
Same about, you know, soap gun.
Yeah, don't do that. Yeah, don't do soap gun. Soap gun's been done. They've done heard it.
But he basically puts all of this incredible inventiveness and verve into escaping.
And into being rearrested as well, evidently.
No, but that's it. As soon as he gets out, he's like, oh, God, I'm knackered. Right, drugs and hookers. Off we go.
Do you think that's how he's a bit like the Beatles later on? He's taking the hallucinogenics to try and imagine up the next escape. Yeah.
I think you should get him on the show. He sounds great.
Yes. And here he is now, burrowing through the floor. Generally speaking, like humans are pretty good at escaping. If you want a really shit escape, go to the animal kingdom.
Oh, yeah.
So, in 2004, in Berlin Zoo, Juan, the Andean spectacled bear...
I already love this story.
...made a move for the exit. He rode on a log across a moat which was designed to keep the bears in their habitats, then managed to scale a wall to gain his freedom. So far, so good for Juan.
However, Paddington 3 is really shaking.
However, he was later found in an overturned car with two dead hookers. But, no, as soon as he
consuming
got out...
two dead hookers...
Oh, God.
No, he basically, so he got out of the bear enclosure, and rather than, you know, making a run for it like an intelligent human would, he went to the zoo's playground where he started chasing parents and toddlers around. He then rode on the merry-go-round and went down the slide. He was eventually captured when he was found inspecting a bicycle, because maybe he thought, I can ride away on this after I'd been taught at the circus how to do it. Sadly, he wasn't wearing a little hat with a propeller on
it.
And as soon as the guards saw him with the bicycle, they shot him with a trank dart, stuck him back down. And Juan would
have... What a glorious few minutes that was, though.
It's similar to your last guy, in that they both really made the most of their time out.
Exactly. It's really recalling to me John Mulaney's bit about the horse loose in the hospital as well, for his analogy for Trump. If you haven't seen that bit, he's going, someone's let a horse loose in a hospital. Someone's let a bear loose in the zoo. Everyone seems to be fine with this. It's using a slide.
And I mean, really what they should have done was stuck him back in an Australian jail. And that would have been my selection if it weren't for an article I read about the East Timorean Brachymi blind snake.
Their time has been coming.
It really has. Now, basically, this is a snake. It basically looks a bit like a worm, but it's a snake.
Okay.
And what happened on a zoologist's... you're not really a zoologist, it was a snake. Fuck it.
Reptilologist.
On a biologist's mission to East Timor in 2012...
I'd say definitely more zoologist than biologist.
Oh, for fuck's sake. On a zoological...
Do you want to look it up?
No! On a zoological expert...
On a snake expert.
On a biological / zoological expedition in 2012, some biologists / zoologists...
You're just giving yourself edit choices here.
Yep. They were examining frogs. And they were examining frogs that, you know, the various different things that it would eat. And what they discovered was that this... Brachymi blind snake was able to survive being eaten by a frog.
Right.
Now, previous animals have been able to survive that. There is a particular type of toxic newt.
Tom is tensing up so much.
How big are these animals?
Oh, no, pretty small.
It's not like a 6-foot long snake and a 12-foot long frog. I don't know.
Are you imagining the frog swirling the snake up into his mouth like a human eating spaghetti?
Yeah. I'll level with you. This is a news article that was written by Brian Bo Larson after returning to prison after one of his drug-fueled escapes. So there is a particular type of newt that certain frogs can eat, and it's a toxic newt, and if it manages to survive going down to the stomach, it doesn't get digested by the gastric juices. It actually poisons the frog from the inside. The frog dies, and then the newt crawls out of the frog's mouth.
Oh, wow.
But this snake is very different. These biologists / zoologists, they actually caught on camera a particular type of frog pooping out the Brachymi blind snake alive.
Ugh.
So what had happened is it had eaten the snake thinking it was a worm. The snake had gone all the way through its stomach and its intestines, and then it had made it out the other side.
The Shaw snake digestion.
Wow. I mean, that was quite an angular pun, but I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
And he, now, the happy side, really impressive. Like, it managed to survive. The sad side, for 5 hours.
Oh, why? Is that its lifespan?
No.
It's born, it's eaten by a frog, shut out by a frog, and it has 5 hours of sunlight.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that just a beautiful analogy for life, isn't it? One is born, one is eaten by a poisonous tree frog, and then shut out, and then dies. There were... So yeah, and this is not a regular occurrence at all. And the article I read felt very much like this biologist / zoologist going, bloody hell, I've seen something weird in East Timor, let me show you. But in terms of escapes, we've all watched Andy Dufresne, you know, go through the sewage pipe, and come out the other side. But then he gets to live his life frolicking in the Caribbean with Morgan Freeman. With Morgan Freeman. But that has a happy ending, whereas this snake, he's been through it. He's been through a frog's digestive tract. And pooped out its bumhole.
Yeah.
And so, although it doesn't have the comedy value of our friend Juan, the reticulated, no, Juan the Andean speculated, not speculated bear.
Is it a bear? Is it a man in a bear suit?
Juan the Andean spectacled bear. I think Juan had a pretty lovely time in his escape.
Yeah,
it was
nice.
It was an escape that went badly, but it was a fun one.
Yeah.
Whereas this Brahmini blind... Also, he's blind. What does he think is happening to him as he's going through the most digestive system?
This normal? This is normal, right?
Yeah, and think about his tiny little dog as well. Lead him through there. So,
how did he die, though?
The five hours.
Oh, so he died. They think it's because whilst his skin was strong enough to withstand the gastric juices, where it was still thin enough and porous enough that toxicity went into it, and so he eventually died.
Just went through him and his mouth open, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Which you should never do when swallowed by a poisonous.
Yeah. Well, yeah, just all the time.
Please, listeners, if you take one thing away from this week.
So, our suggestions this week are Barry's suggestion of Houdini's failed Chinese water torture trick, which eventually, via a series of unfortunate events, led to his death. Andrew's suggestion of George Billy Hunt, the kangaroo impersonator... who almost got away with it.
Was that his job as well? That would have been amazing.
Tom's suggestion of Nijelko Kabrinovich, the guy who almost but didn't quite start World War One and then failed to make an adequate escape. Or my suggestion of the hapless frog-swallowed Brabini blind snake. I mean, an absolute chocolate box of suggestions, gentlemen. Luckily, I'm not going to have to try and deliberate over who's going to be the winner. It's obviously George Billy Hunt.
Obviously the guy who dressed as a kangaroo.
That is... That was one of the ones when, as soon as it was apparent what you were saying,
yeah,
me and Barry were like, that's a clear winner.
Yeah.
That is a clear winner.
Walk over or a hop over.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a shame he didn't make his way through a giant Australian snake's digestive system to get out. Before we go, it's time for the world's worst news, and this week we're going to South Korea, to Hongcheong, to be precise, and it's quite on message, because South Koreans are signing up to spend 24 hours in a mock prison. They spend $90 in order to break away from the demands of everyday life. In the words of one 28-year-old office worker, the prison gives me a sense of freedom.
Wow.
Since 2013, Prison Inside Me facility has hosted more than 2,000 inmates, many of them stressed out office workers and students seeking relief from South Korea's demanding work and academic culture.
It's an actual prison they're going to.
Well, basically, it's a fake prison.
Okay, it's a fake prison, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they don't need...
They're clogging up the prison system with privatised prisons.
Yeah, no, I mean, it would work. What you do, you get... So, prison rules are strict. No talking with other inmates. No mobile phones or cloaks.
Cloaks. No wizards. No, can't have any wizards in this prison.
Or clocks.
It ain't Hogwarts.
You get the clients, your prisoners, mate, get a blue prison uniform, a yoga mat, a tea set, a pen and a notebook. They sleep on the floor and there's a small toilet inside the room, but no... mirror.
This all sounds like someone intended to build a spa and ran out of money, halfway through. So I've got a good idea.
The woman behind it, co-founder No Ji Hyang, was quoted as saying, "After a stay in the prison, people say, this is not a prison. The real prison is where we return to."
Oh, fuck off and die. Then be shot out through a snake. Through a frog, through a kangaroo.
That is quite the Christmas dinner you are preparing for us. A South Korean office worker inside a frog, inside a snake, inside a kangaroo. Before we go, gentlemen, where can people find you and what can they find you doing when they get there?
Well, mostly Harmless is on Twitter at
MH_escape.
You can find me many a place. You can see me. I'll be on the BBC show Hold the Sunset coming up with John Cleese, Alison Steadman.
Oh, wow. Exciting. Nice.
Yeah.
tremendous.
And tell them about the detail. And tell them about the details of Escape the Jacket.
That's going to be on at the Vault Festival from the 21st of February, running for about 6 weeks.
So that's in London and Waterloo. Go to the Vault Festival. Just look up Vault Festival, Escape the Jacket, and you'll find all the details.
Yeah, there's a big tunnel covered in graffiti full of starving artists. It's really cold. Yeah. People are drunk. It's great. You come down, have a lovely time.
It's the same one I have a play on at. You may have heard me talk about it previously.
Yeah.
But if you don't want to, you know, sit and watch a theatre and feel constricted, and there get tied up in a jacket for half an hour instead.
Yeah, I think it'll be a real nice palate cleanser for people, you know? Yeah. Between really meaty bits of like deep thought, deep thinking plays, go try and escape a jacket for 30 minutes.
Yeah, a bit of light S&M, very light intro S&M.
It's an introductory course. Yeah.
S&M 101.
Perfect stuff. Well, we're all off to skin a couple of wallabies and then break into the Bank of England. Until next time. Bye.
We made it just out of the episode in time. Ooh, wow. That was, you are sweating like a pig.
That's how I end every podcast.
Thank you very much to Tom and Andrew. Do check out the Vault Festival. Lots of amazing stuff happening there, not least my play Vespertilio and their amazing show, Escape the Jacket. So if you're in London or want to come visit, go check it out.
Yes, you absolutely should. And hey, if we're going to start with plugs, we'll start with plugs for me as well. Coming up next week, next Monday night, is my usual Monday night show in Camden Town called Good Ship Comedy. We've got an amazing headliner this week. It is a chap called Rob Broderick, better known as a Banderman. He does improvised Irish hip-hop, which is a lot less shit than it sounds.
No, we all do it back home. It's like second nature to all of us.
Yeah, but you try telling Seamus Heaney that's what he was doing. He gets very angry.
As ever, thank you all for listening. You can check out the podcast in various other places online. On Twitter, we're on at WorstFoot. Ben's on at Ben Vanderveld, and I'm on at BazMaxStay. We have a Facebook page if you look up WorstFoot Forward. You can email us, worstfootforwardpodcast@gmail.com, or... What were you going to say?
Oh, no. I was going to say that we have received a couple of emails recently of people suggesting guests that could be on here. Obviously, as we said at the start of the show, if you want to suggest a topic, then that's going to cost you a little bit of the green stuff, by which I mean money, not marijuana or sprouts. But guests, if you think there's someone who would be brilliant on here, feel free to throw us names and possibly contact details, and we'll try and get them on the show.
And also, you can find all of our previous episodes and photos of our previous guests and things like that on our website, worstfootforwardpodcast.com.
Next week, we have a phenomenal American stand-up comedian called Mike Kaplan. He is visiting the United Kingdom in February to play the Soho Theatre, and he is someone who you're going to be hearing more and more of. He's already becoming quite a big deal in the States. I literally just sat down and watched a clip of him on The Late Late Show with James Corden. So, guaranteed, he's going to be pretty funny. He's got a podcast of his own, which no doubt we'll talk about, which gets geeky and granular about the creative process. And he is going to get geeky, granular, and we think quite meta next week, because the topic is going to be the world's worst guest.
I literally cannot wait for this episode.
Have you already done research for
it? Oh, and we're just going to tell Mike it's Mike, right?
Yeah. Okay.
Then the podcast finally eats itself.
Yeah, no, because his plan was to come on, and I think in quite a geeky North American Jewish way to go, oh, it's me. Yeah. It's definitely me. So basically, the three of us are going to dogpile on him.
Yeah, fine.
Brilliant. And that is the meaning of hospitality in Brexit Britain. Until next week, bye.
Bye.
Worst Foot Forward is part of Podnose, the UK's leading independent entertainment podcasting network. For episode archives of Worst Foot Forward and all of the shows on the network, visit us at www.podnose.com. You can also follow us on Twitter via @podnose or send us an email via admin@podnose.com.